Now, I understand on May 1st, 1965, Ron Edgar decided to depart the band. Obviously, he and Sean Bonenwell and Keith Olsen had been planning things.
Sean was, when he came to California, and he probably had it planned for a long time, but the word was out, he was putting together a rock band. Keith had already said yes, joined forces with him, and he asked Ron Edgar if he would join them in their rock band. The first name they had was called the Ragamuffins. And so Ron Edgar left our group to, progress along. He thought it would be a good progression for himself to join forces with Sean and Keith.
And, of course, the Ragamuffins turned into the Music Machine.
Right. The Ragamuffins then became the Music Machine with their chart hit, Talk Talk, written by Sean Bonenwell.
Right. So you needed to get a new drummer then, right?
Right. Kurt found a new drummer in Los Angeles, and his name was Bill Taylor. He was really good, and that was our replacement for Ron.
I understand you had an audition at the Whiskey A Go-Go.
We probably, from David Marish, all of a sudden we're auditioning at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Beverly Hills on Sunset Strip, which is another, very innovative, famous place. And he accepted our group. He said, but we had to learn dance songs, so he was going to hire us if we learned dance songs. Of course we could learn dance songs. We were moving right along. That was not a problem. And one of our first songs we learned was It Hurts to Be in Love by Gene Pitney. And just when you listen to it, if you're a harmony person, you can just already hear a lot of harmonies without anybody singing them. It really applies to having a lot of harmonies. It was really nice learning that song.
Were you planning to stay in Hollywood?
Well, it's funny. We are staying at the Greenbrier. The Goldbrier is staying at the Greenbrier Apartments in Hollywood. Well, that's, besides New York City, this was a real, L.A., Hollywood, Beverly Hills. That was the place to be it felt like it was the place to be. It was pretty far up the chain there to get the word out, and there were a lot of people there that could, get the word out for the group.
So you were learning dance songs in order to get the job at the Whiskey A Go-Go on the Sunset Strip, and what happens next?
We had probably practiced two or three times, and we were also learning Sakura, which is a Japanese song. If anybody knows any of the hits from Japan, that would be one. I didn't know what it meant, but it's this Japanese song with Japanese melody, and we were actually learning it in Japanese with Kurt directing us. Well, one day we were gathering together for a rehearsal. Sherry and I discovered that there were some personal problems in the group that we were totally unaware of, that there was no way to go forward, that it was like a destroying factor for the Goldbriers. So it was either mind or money. As much as I love the Goldbriers and that was my dream come true, we had to make a decision to leave the group, and so we left the group.
How did Epic Records react to this new information?
Well, I'm sure they were shocked. We had a third album coming out. We had a booking on Shindig. A booking on Hullabaloo had just, had successful one-night special for Coconut Grove, and we were going to be booked into the Whiskey A Go-Go. So, yeah, it was like everything was ready to bust open for us. And like other groups, if there is you can say like you have a disease, and the disease is not going to, it's going to cause a death to that person, or we'll say the group. So if there's no way that you can keep the group alive, you have to move on. It's for your own mental worth. So Sherry and I were the ones to contact Epic and tell them that we were leaving the group, and Epic asked if they could pull in a couple other people to become the Goldbriars, you know, take over our places, and we said no, you know, and I really think we made the right decision. Even though I didn't hear the third album, you know, I heard that tape that we were given for the third album. It disappeared after that. I didn't hear it, didn't know if anybody had it or where it was. I never heard the music again until 2000, I think it was six, you know, and when, well, that's another story, but when it was brought out of the archives, it kind of went to sleep in the what was Columbia Epic Archives and then became Sony. It was sleeping in the archives for all those years.
So the third album recorded for Epic did not come out.
No, it didn't come out. Everything was just, it's just like the faucet turned off. It was gone. Everything was gone. You know, and it was sad. But you have to do what you know is right. And we knew it was right to leave. So that's all I'm saying.
So after the Goldbriars come to an end, what did you do?
I was, let me see, how old was I then? 18. I was 20, going on 21. I was very young and growing up. It was like, just like other people that age, growing pains of growing up. And first of all, I had to get a job. First, Sherry and Keith and I, Sherry was married to Keith Olson by then, stayed at Gail Garnett's apartment while she was in Europe doing overdubs for speaking parts in English, where it would have been, I don't know what country she was in. And then I got a job, and after that, you know, my goal always was to be a singer and performer. I mean, by 3 years old, I knew that's all I wanted to do. Although I had a great education, that was my one goal. So, as I was growing up, I realized I could produce poetry and write songs, and I just kept on writing because it was a good way to reflect your youth as you get a little bit older. That was my outlet. Was some people play an instrument? Maybe some people golf. Some people surf. I was writing. Over a period of time, I started, I was able to record some of my songs, and I had lots and lots of songs. I recorded eight of them in Hollywood with different people and labels and all that. And they just kind of sat in my closet along with a lot of demos. I had a lead guitar player for years. And in 2002, I get a phone call or an email from a classic company that releases classic music, not classical, but old music, pop, folk, rock, you know, from way back when. Classical, that's how I call it, classical. They were already releasing some of Kurt Betcher's music that he recorded after the Goldbriars with a couple groups in the Columbia Studios, the Ballroom, and the Millennium. And we can just picture they had this tree with branches on it. And somehow they discovered I was on a branch. And they asked, how can we get a hold of her to see if she has any Kurt Betcher productions or anything to do with Kurt Betcher? So they emailed me, and then, you know, we had made good contact. And I said, boy, do I have stuff. I kept all the original. I had tapes from the studios and all, and Kurt had produced four of them with our productions, and I wrote two of the four. Keith Olson produced two of them at Original Sound, and under Bobby Gentry Limited, Bobby Gentry's company, at Hollywood Sound recording studio, I recorded a couple more of my originals. So, and then I had like nine demos. And they told me to send everything I had, and I did within 3 weeks. First, they were going to do a single on me. I said, you're kidding. And I said, great. And then they contacted me a week later, said, no, we have 17 songs we want to put out on you on a solo CD. So you never know. When you have a dream, it might take all those years, but I have a CD out now under Sometimes Happy Times. It's sold worldwide by Sunday's Music. It was a dream come true. You just never know when your dreams are going to come true. So that was very exciting. And all the Goldbriar music is out now. First was Japan Sony. They put out the first two albums. America here, Epic, which was Columbia, which was Legacy Music, said, you know, by me contacting the producer there, or the director said they couldn't put it out. There was contract problems, which I don't know if that'd be. But anyway, so Sony in Japan put out the first two albums, and I had, the Goldbergs had a fan club over the years in Japan. They were finding me on the internet, and they said, your first two albums are out. So I had one of my, you know, good friends, Akahide Nakamura. I said, you know, there's a lot more music in the Sony archives, and here are the file numbers given to me by Dawn Eden, who used to do liner notes for Legacy Music. She got those on her own once because she was a true Kurt Becher fan. I think because of her, Kurt's music came out. And so Akahide met with the engineer, producer, director, whatever, of Sony in Japan. And within 48 hours, they had all the music out of the archives sent to them. You know, with electronic, now you can do everything. And within a short, you know, a few days, they sent me all of the music, FedEx overnight type of thing from Japan, and I got to hear the music for the first time since 1965. And this is before they went and everybody, when you get music, they don't care how good it is, they're always going to put their little engineering touch on it. So this was before Sony put their touch on it. So and you know, Collector's Choice Music here in America that put it up, they're going to say they reproduced it, but all the music was already just great. You know, I don't know why they had to be reproducing all of the masters that they got out of the archives. I'm sure they were well kept with proper temperature and all, because when Columbia recorded us, they had the best quality, the best in the world for the number of tracks at the time. They're just like little kids with a new toy. You've got Sony in Japan going over every song saying they reproduced it all, and you've got Collector's Choice Music saying they did the same thing when they put it out in America. So they just all have fun doing that, I guess, is what it is.
And what about Sherry? What did Sherry do after the Goldbriars came to an end?
Like I said, she was married to Keith Olsen, and she did quite a bit of vocal background at our productions, Tommy Rowe, and her voice, you can hear her on Hazel and Sweet Pea. I wasn't doing a vocal background on those two songs. I was kind of out on my own by that time. The 60s and the drugs all around, the recording studios, you could cut it with a knife. Nobody was in there saying don't do that, and I was hypersensitive to all of that. So, but Sherry was married to Keith, and he was like a genius. He was in there working on several things and working with Kurt on the Millennium. So Sherry didn't join the Millennium. I don't think she's on any of those recordings, but she was offered to. But she did a lot of vocal background on several, and those were all in the Columbia recording studio. So the Goldbriars were in the Columbia studios in New York, and now, you know, Kurt is working on different projects and funded by Columbia, our productions in L.A., so Columbia and Columbia, I guess. It just worked out that way.
What did you know about our productions?
Well, all I know is Kurt called me up one day and said, could you do some vocal background for us? And I had office jobs and all because I had those skills. So I did because I got paid for it. Shortly thereafter, he asked me if I would please record as a single for him. After they finished recording me, I don't know if they recorded anybody after me. They went bankrupt. So I got all my master recordings. Steve Clark, the owner of our productions, Kurt was a producer for our productions, stopped by my house one day and gave me all the masters, which is pretty neat because they were able to be used for, you know, Sunday's music. You know, the reel-to-reel, back then it wasn't CDs, it was actually reel-to-reels. So that was nice of him.
And, of course, Kurt Becher is known now as one of the premier architects of Sunshine Pop. Did you ever hear that term back in the 60s?
That term, I think, came out in the 80s, you know, when people were able to look at the progression of music you know, where it came from, all the way up the line, and then we started at folk, and then it was folk pop, and then we were always told we were like 4 to 5 years ahead of our time. Like, what planet did you guys come from? Nobody sounds like you. You're just sound weird, but we like you. You know, but it's like you're so exotic sounding. We were actually way ahead of our time. When we met some of these people along our journey, like Cass Elliott and Denny Dougherty, John and Michelle Phillips, and Zal, and John Sebastian, when we met all these people, they got to hear our sound, and they were folk but sounded nice. And like Cass Elliott had been in a group, we saw her before the Shadows. She was, I think she was around Tennessee or whatever, called the Big Four, and I can't remember who all four of those, but
that was the big three.
The Big Three? Oh, I thought it was the Big Four. But she was, you know, she had been working along, and then right before the Mamas and Papas formed, she was in the Bahama Islands performing as a soloist. But she had been in it a long time. When people looked back and wanted to probably write the history of music, they were able to pick out the Goldbriars and the architect, heard of his arrangements and all, and say actually, if you look back on it now, the Goldbriars, I always felt, were the missing link between folk pop and the next just pop. With a little rock, we were just that. We were like the category in between, and I'm sure, like even the Yardbirds we heard from England, were trying to copy our harmonies. The manager for the Beatles had heard our music. I'm trying to remember his name. Isn't that terrible? He's Epstein. He had heard the Goldbriars, and he had let our agency in New York know that he was thinking seriously about sponsoring a tour for the Goldbriars in England. And Sea of Tears had already been released there, and it, you know, got to be heard. And maybe he heard us at that point from there, too. They released a pressing of Sea of Tears. I don't know what a pressing is, 5,000 or something. But then we also heard that the Yardbirds were, like, so enamored with our harmonies, they were trying to copy it. It was pretty hard for them. So, and that was a compliment, because they had a great sound.
Do you have an opinion as to why the Goldbriars became so popular in Japan in later decades?
I don't know. Different parts of the world have different favorites. I think our sound was, it wasn't bubblegum, although you could say Licorice sounded like a bubblegum type of arrangement. We had sophisticated harmonies. We had a sophisticated sound. It just seems... just everything seemed more sophisticated. And even though you can look back now and say, well, look at how the music has evolved, I think good music stays around forever. And even though a lot of people have never heard of the Goldbriars because we broke up, the people that do listen to the music do really like it. And I think if people are looking at the progression of music, they could say, wow, they were in this little niche that this niche turned into this other niche, you know, with the Mamas and Papas. They were the birth of sunshine pop. I would definitely say the Goldbriars were the birth of sunshine pop, and you could, you know, give Kurt the architect title, but we still had to have the formula of the sound with our voices, because he had other groups after us, and they never had our sound, never. So Sherry and I were an integral part of that magic. You know, either you got the magic or you don't. The ballroom sounded great and the Millennium sounded great, but they didn't have the same magic that the Goldbriars had. I guess maybe with our sophistication, we also had simplicity. You know, and if you know what I mean by the simplicity, does that make sense?